Live from Truvy's Hair Salon in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and brought to you by The Thunder from Down Under, putting the g'day in your mate. I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2 Talk.
In the great hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes. Created from the cosmic legends of the universe, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Aquaman, and those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Today is January 17th, 2011, and we are recording episode number 15. And Allie, I am all for truth, justice, and the American way of life, but why don't we still have theme music?
Well, I ran out of total, and I had to eat 12 bowls of Wheaties. Do you know how long it takes to eat 12 bowls of Wheaties, Del?
I do not, but that is a boatload of milk.
It certainly is.
That'll keep you regular, though. So what else have you been doing other than hawking down bowls of cereal?
Well, actually, since our last show, you remember that I said one of my goals to complete before the expansion?
Yes.
To get the EverQuester achievement done, which is completing 5,000 quests.
I do remember that. Yes, I do.
Well, I did it.
Well, congrats to you, then. That is quite the accomplishment.
Thank you very much. I have to say it was way more rewarding and exciting than I expected it to be. But it's probably because I did it while I was on a raid. We went to MMB and killed, I forget the guy's name.
Gozak.
And completed Hook, Line, and Anchor. And that was my 5,000th quest. According to the game achievement window. I have actually completed way more than 5,000, but according to the game achievement window.
Well, congratulations. That is quite an accomplishment. And for those of you who don't know, MMB is Munzok's Material Bastion, I believe.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it was totally awesome. It was great to have all my friends there, and it was just a really memorable gaming moment.
Do you still have Permigrin from it a little bit?
I do. I have the little cloak that I'm wearing now. I put together a new little outfit to go with it, so that's what I'm going to be wearing for a while.
I am shaking my head in disgust. You earned a new achievement, and you had to coordinate your new outfit with the achievement reward.
Yes.
It wouldn't have been just as well just to put the cloak on?
No, it wouldn't have matched my outfit at the time. So, Del, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Actually, things have gotten a lot better recently. You know, in past episodes, I've droned on a little bit about raiding the same old over and over again. Well, we've seemed to have broken out of that rut for the better. We have not digressed into worse and slower things, but we are actually at this point... We are now taking out hard mode encounters, which has been a huge accomplishment for us. And I think my guild is very thrilled to be doing those. We took out Malice Imbued the other day in the Palace of Rowan Thier. And two or three days later, after an oops factor, we did have a little oops in Lair of the Dragon Queen, we managed to beat Toxulia.
Wow, that's huge.
That is a huge accomplishment for us, and I think... We've been working at it very hard, and mainly not for a lack of skill, but a lack of numbers and diverse and balancing classes that complement each other. Numbers have been where we've struggled in having enough people week in and week out. We finally got those people back. We've got all classes that work well together. So we've finally been able to take down some of these encounters. So definitely Permigrin moments on both of those encounters because we've tried them and just we failed miserably earlier. But now we've really seemed to hit our stride and fantastic. Getting new loot, so it's great to see people spending DKP.
Yeah.
and not outfitting alts anymore, which is, you know, I think is a great thing. Let's get stuff for our mains. I managed to pick up a new earring from Tox, which was great. Been skunked on Malice Imbued twice now. No hat for me. So hoping next time around when we get him, he'll hopefully have some fat loots for me.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to go back a little bit. You said the numbers are better.
Yes.
So do you feel like that has anything to do with the merge?
Yes, no, maybe so. Not really sure. To be honest, I think we've maybe only picked up one or two members from Nagina. To be honest, I don't know. I don't see people in the server that they're from. I just see people.
So do you feel like it's because more people are back playing the game after finally the long holiday sort of break is over and they're back to the normal routine?
Yeah, some of that also. I think I don't want to call it a merger, but we picked up a large segment of folks from another guild that was struggling and brought them in as a group. So I think that's worked out well. So we're back up to 24. We're not having the same 16 or 18 a night. We've got a full complement of 24 plus, and a few folks have had to sit, which is, you know, par for the course, because you can't have exactly 24, I don't think, and have success, because there'll be one night when one person can't make it, and then you're down to 23. So you do have to have a bit of an overflow population to draw from.
I actually think sitting a couple people is a good sign.
It is. As much as it stinks to be that fellow who has to sit,
yeah,
it is a good thing, because you know there'll be a night where somebody has a work function or is stuck in traffic or family or something like that come up so that they can't attend. So you do need to have backups in all your major roles. It has mean that at times I've been rolled down to G4, G5, G6 occasionally, and they win. So that's still positive.
That's very interesting. I didn't know there was a G5 and a G6.
When Delmon's in your raid, there is absolutely G6.
Wow, very impressive. I kind of like G4 myself.
Yeah, G4
No one expects anything out of you at all, and so you can blow them away.
Exactly. G4, I often say, is the we could have taken anybody group, but we picked you.
Right.
G5 is those folks who are in the guild hall waiting for the call-up. G6 is people who are in the bleachers just cheering.
Right.
Say invent or something, and aren't even in the game yet. So,
one other thing I wanted to ask you: you said there was a little bit of an oops factor. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Sure. We went into Tox lair one night with the intention of pulling Tox, and did the first two mobs, and killed it. And then all of a sudden, Tox flew off like she does on easy mode, and we just got Vulan. Looking back in the text, I didn't see anybody who had clicked their crystal to put us in easy mode. A few other people said they didn't see the same thing. So the first night we really wanted to work on Tox again, we couldn't, because somehow either somebody in the group accidentally activated easy mode or something went afoul in the script and we got assigned easy mode. I know there was some certain headhunting for folks, but hey, you know what? Stuff happens. We got it on the next try. And I didn't see anything to indicate that somebody made a mistake. My opinion is we had a bug in the code or something, and something went awry and cost us a night at Tox, but got it down the next night. So our oops factor was somehow we initiated easy mode without even realizing it.
And I think I remember you mentioning something about when you did do it, it was ultra hard.
Yes. Well, our first time, you know, first time you do an encounter like that, even though you've read every strat on the forums, you've watched every YouTube video about it, you've listened to your raid leaders intently and made notes, and you've got your act timers and guild connect and everything's all set, potions, hotbarred, buttons, everything, you still got to see the encounter. You still got to do it once, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can win in raiding by being completely academic. You have to try it once. You can't just read the textbooks and succeed. And our first attempt at it, we had a few deaths. We had a lot of deaths. Okay, we had a whole boatload of deaths. And we took Tox all the way to enraged mode. And that was a lot of fun, because I think from that point on, the fight took about 3 seconds. There was no need for the raid leader to even finish the saying, wipe it, because we wiped it instantly once we hit enraged mode. So I think... you know, you can go in as prepared as you think you are, but still doing the encounter, you learn a lot. You see where you are in the room. Where is exactly max range? I'm looking at the floor. I'm looking at the wall. I know where the tanks are. I know how long it takes them to shift left to right. So I know how to time my spells and that sort of stuff, or make sure I cast this right before the AE. And you get in that rhythm. I don't think you get that rhythm from just reading forums and reading strats.
So when you finally did kill it hard mode, wasn't there a little something else that happened? Or did you not want to share that?
Oh, that? Oh, that, yes. Oh, gee, I had almost blocked that. funny story. So this is a bit of a spoiler about the Tox encounter, so I don't want to ruin it for anybody who doesn't know this. When you get her down, you do use the crystal when she's attacking to resummon Shara to help you finish off the fight. Well, we weren't paying attention. Got her all the way down into, you know, single percentage, 1, 2, 3, ready for the hit verdict, and all of a sudden she's back at half health. And there was a lot of WTFing. Apparently nobody clicked the crystal to help us finish her off. So we actually killed her a second time again in that same fight. I think the fight went on, what did I say, 27 some odd minutes?
Something like that.
27 minutes of a fight. We amazingly held it together long enough to kill her 1.5 times because we had to go through the script a second time because we did not click the crystal that time. I think everybody was maybe so paranoid from our first visit. Don't touch the crystal. Take the crystal. Right. Leave it in the back. Don't bring it. Don't do anything. That we completely forgot about that step. And somebody said, I think we're supposed to click the crystal at this point. And then you just see your health bar go shooting way up. And you're like, oh my God, we just did enraged mode again. Nope, forgot the crystal. So our first few rounds of talks, lots of fun, lots of WTFing, and I will say many nights of Permigrin after that, you know, fist pump, we did it.
Awesome.
And I'll say this, as I said in guild chat, you know, hardcore modes, guilds, they kill it with the crystal. We are true hard mode because, or true hardcore, we kill it twice, uphill, both ways. Damn the crystal. We're real hardcore.
Even if it was by accident.
Even if it was by accident. Or just not paying attention to what we're doing.
Well, congrats on that. That's a pretty huge accomplishment.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We had a fun time doing it and look forward to more kills of her and more fat loot.
And that's what it's all
and
about.
Crystal cricking along the way.
Crystal cricking.
Crystal, yes, that's what you should do. Crystal cricking.
All right. So we had some more listener feedback this time. Do you want me to go ahead and get started with that?
Absolutely.
Okay, we had another nice little note from Indabuff from the Nectalos server. Hi, guys. Enjoyed your last podcast, though I really did go on a bit in that email. I want you guys to know that I think you have a good thing going. You two click together as a team on the cast, and from this side, it feels comfortable. I have listened to some of the others and have to say it has not felt that way with them. In fact, in one case, I had to turn it off as it was almost painful to listen to. That being said, it's easy for me to sit and state what I feel. I'm not the one on the program. I don't discount for a moment that you put yourselves out there for anyone to take a hit at, though I never state anything with the intent of correction. It's just my take, and of course, you can take it or leave it. As for my Frostfell wish, well, it was just lazy. I really didn't take the time to think of something, so just include it all. Now, I do think the items moving in any direction is very doable for sure. So for my fantasy wish, how about picture frames you could put a screenshot in and then place in your house or guild hall? That could be a lot of fun. I wanted to maybe clear the air somewhat about extended. I don't know what people that have not been over there may think, but it's really not all that different from live. The only gear that is sold is Mastercrafted. That's it, well, and a lot of fluff. They sell farmables and the rares and maybe a few potions and such that Live does not have. There really is not this market that you can buy your way to the top, as many may think. The one thing they do have is a larger player base on the low-end stuff. As for the guild stuff, SOE has stated they will not be removing anything from the halls. They were just working on ideas for new things to hopefully pull more people into the towns. So, okay, here it comes. I have to disagree again on the point of how players get to high levels and don't know how to play their tune. This, again, is a result of a top-heavy game. The new players, me included, don't get the chance to group up in lower levels, to learn group dynamics, and end up having to learn them at 90. Now, there will always be the ones that are hopeless and will never learn as they don't care to try. But for the most part, it's lack of practice in groups. Find the ones that really want to learn and take them in. Share what you know, and you will again fill your ranks with good players. Signed, Indebuff. So, Del, did you have any thoughts about any of the points that Indebuff made?
Yes, I first want to say thank you very much for Indebuff's email. I remember Indebuff was one of our first, not the first, but one of the first folks who emailed us. And I always remember the way she ended her first email, saying that she hadn't made up her mind about us just yet, but she'd keep on listening. Yep. And I'm thrilled to hear that she has been enjoying the show and has pulled an Inde hubby as well to listen to the show. So thank you very much for bearing with us through some of our more awkward moments and growing pains as we've learned how to do the podcast together. So thank you very much for your very kind words about enjoying how comfortable we sound together.
I agree. I really love getting this, though. It's a nice, it's always nice to get feedback where people say they enjoy the chemistry that we have, or they enjoy the show, or they get mad or whatever. I want people to be interested in what we're talking about. And the worst thing I think would be to get bored and walk out of the room.
Yes. And not, as you say, Allie, not to receive email from folks as well. Sometimes when we're doing the show, we do, you know, a fair amount of homework and the time to record and edit and get the website going and all that sort of stuff. So it's emails like Indebuff here that help help put the chin strap back on and get back in the game at times when it's like, ugh, I got to do that, or ugh, I got to do this. So emails like that really do give us a warm and fuzzy on the inside.
Yes, they certainly do. I did want to mention she makes a point about extended being it's not all that people think it is. I think it's really easy to generalize if you haven't seen what it is. So I actually took the time to download the EQ2X launcher thingy, whatever, and I haven't actually installed it yet. So I'll get back to you when I install it. I was going to check it out just to really see what it's all about, so I know what the heck I'm talking about. You can't really complain about something if you don't know at least some of the ins and outs of it. So I thought I would download it and give it a try. So I'll have to get back to you on that one. The other thing I wanted to remark on is Indebuff's comment that players get to high levels and don't know how to play their tune, and she believes that it's because of a top-heavy game. I do agree with that. The last show when I was talking about more complaining about people who don't know how to play their class going on raids and such, it's a very small percentage who I'm talking about, sort of. I think there's a range of players. There are those who are completely in tune with every single aspect of their character and are constantly looking at gear, looking at AA spec, looking at casting order, looking at every little nuance. And then there are people who do a little bit less than that, people who feel like they are pretty much on top of their game and don't necessarily go look back at what they're doing. And then there's more casual, blah, 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 all the way down to somebody who has no clue whatsoever. I do believe it's a small percentage. It's just incredibly frustrating to see somebody who's at level 90, who's been raiding for a while, actually not know what a cure curse is. And I don't blame SOE for that necessarily. And I guess maybe I kind of did. So I guess maybe I need to take that back a little bit.
I agree. I think, too, sometimes the extremes are what stand out. So when you have that one bad experience with somebody, that one, you always seem to remember that. And maybe then generalize on the rest of folks at times, which is human nature.
And it's also Allie's nature to make broad, sweeping statements.
We had another email from Whirl on the Everfrost server, and Whirl writes, "Hail, long-time listener, first-time feedbacker. During your 13th episode, Superstitions Be Damned, you had mentioned during your wish list how it really irked you when you are pulled into an instance by a group member clicking into the zone, which sometimes causes you to lose everything you've been typing to somebody which in turns make you retype everything. I assume you mean that while you are zoning, if you press enter to send your text, it gets lost in the EQ2 void and not sent to the recipient. Well, you don't need to retype it. Simply get your cursor ready to type, either by pressing enter or clicking into the chat area, and then press the up arrow key. Doing this will reinsert whatever you've last put into the chat box. If you continue to press the up arrow key, it will keep going back to previous things you've typed. Wasn't sure if you were aware of this feature, just wanted to give you a heads up in case you weren't. Truly enjoying the show and really looking forward to hearing your all's thoughts on Velius and changes it incorporates. I'm trying to do my southern accent here. Hold on.
Oh, boy. That was terrible.
Y'alls. Sincerely, Whirl, human monk on Everfrost of the Kindred Destruction Guild. So, Allie, my southern accent attempts aside, I think this was something that you had commented on that you had struggled with while playing.
Yeah, it was. We were talking about the pluses and minuses of clicking in to a zone, pulling the entire group in. And one of my big complaints was when I'm in the middle of a conversation and somebody in the raid clicks us in, I lose what I was typing to them. And he's right. I did mean when you press enter and it gets lost in the EQ2 void, it didn't actually go to the person. I do know about that feature where you hit enter and you hit the up arrow key. But for some reason, I feel like that doesn't work in those cases. I haven't tested it since then because I haven't had the opportunity. But yes, I did know about that. I just don't know that I've necessarily tried it. I just complained. And usually it's my husband who does the clicking in, so I just give him a dirty look. And then he says, well, I'm so sorry for interrupting your chat with my raid. So then I just abandon the conversation. So, but thanks for that, because maybe there are some people who didn't know about that little feature. And it's always great to hear from somebody who is a listener who's never said anything before. It's great to hear some feedback. So now we have one more listener, maybe seven now. It's pretty awesome.
We're closing in on double digits.
I know. Cool. So we had another email from our friend Sprouts over on the Freeport server, which is the EQ2X server. Happy New Year. This might be a little late, but I'd like to toss my Frostfell wish out there. My wish is for a target nearest hostel target hotkey to be added. I use the target nearest NPC, but that doesn't always work. Nothing like casting all your furry.
He did mistype that.
That's okay. I'm deleting the one. Nothing. Great. Sprouts does it again. Nothing like casting all your fury on an animal den or some other harvesting node while the mob gets... Nothing like casting all your fury on an animal den or some other harvesting node while the mob gets in an extra couple hits. I found the discussion... Are you laughing? Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Furry. Furry fury. Hey, it's a furry fury. Are you picturing, like, people dressed up in animal suits? I knew it.
Damn you, Sprouts.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm fine.
Are you? I found the discussion on not knowing your class to be an interesting one. Allie seems to have had a very bad experience with this. Really? I'm sorry to say that this will always be a problem. Will or has...
Wilbur? Who's Wilbur?
Will or has it increased with the dumbing down of the game? I'm not sure. Even in Ultima Online, which isn't dumbed down, we had people racing to endgame-like areas, and they would end up getting people killed because they didn't know what they were doing. Anyway, furry... Anyway, I don't think you can teach these people. They're not new players. maybe new to this MMO, but they've played MMOs before. I think it is just a case of self-esteem, being able to tell whoever I am a 90 such and such, and look at all my high-end gear, and how they were able to do this within such a short period of time because they have elite skills. These are the same people that would buy high-end stack gear if it existed. I guess in the end it's a problem, but to every problem there's a silver lining. They're putting money into the game that you love. Now onto the new player I have to interject here. There are no truly new players coming to EQ2. They're all people that have played other MMOs or have played EQ2 in the past. All truly new traffic is going to WoW. The only exception to this would be someone that is already playing EQ2, bringing in a new player. But even then, that new player is getting taught. So it's still not someone I'd consider truly new and wandering about completely unknowing. A question, which is worse? Having items that you can get in-game through quests or raids, purchasable with station cash? Or having items that you can buy with station cash that are not available to receive in-game, which would keep your quested and raid items unique. I'll leave you with that. Have a great weekend. Good hunting, Sprouts. P.S. This picture came to mind while listening to the last podcast. Barth the healer that can't heal looks around in amazement at all the destruction him and more so his party rained down on this dungeon. He notices a ranger walking towards him. She seems to be somewhat wounded, but not mortally. As she gets closer, he recognizes her as the one that was yelling at him the entire battle. Something about feel them. But he never could figure out what he was supposed to be feeling or who. As she approaches, she draws an arrow and puts it to her bow. Barth's eyes widen, his heart races, and then he feels a sudden burning and extreme pain coming from his foot. He collapses to the ground, holding his foot in agony. He looks up at the ranger with tears in his eyes. She looks down at him and says, "Heal that!" She then turns and slowly walks away. That is awesome. That is totally awesome.
I don't know where he gets that image.
That is totally awesome. I love it. From me bitching about the healer who doesn't know how to heal. Did you block this out of your memory from the last podcast?
I did, but I was going to share what I envisioned while you were reading his email.
Oh, furry animals?
Some fellow dressed up as a giant chipmunk, harvesting from a den, maybe in Sinking Sands. While an extra mob got a few more licks in on him.
Oh, boy.
It's Sprouts. I mean, he's done this to us before.
Yes, the Giggle Fest.
I don't know what Sprouts has got going on over there.
furry parties.
Maybe that's what goes on over at Extended. And maybe that's why you're downloading it. I don't know. There's some unresolved issue with small woodland creatures that you rangers will have. Oh, Sprouts, you've done it again.
So, Del, back to Sprouts' email. He does ask a really interesting question. And I thought we could talk about this a little bit. We sort of wanted to give our answer to that. What do you think? You want me to read it again?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you read it again, you know, so folks can have it fresh in their mind as we talk about it.
So his question is, which is worse, having items that you can get in-game through quests or raids being purchasable with station cash, or having items that you can buy with station cash that you cannot get in-game, which would keep your quested and raid items unique?
So for me, this is a bit of a difficult question to answer because it involves a little bit of what I think is the lesser of two evils. No need to go into another rant about my position on station cash. I think I've pretty much made that clear in the past. It is what it is, and it's here to stay. What Sprouts doesn't indicate in his question is, though, these items that he's referring to. Are they items with stats and procs and bonuses and whatnot, or are they fluff items? I tend to think that it is stat-worthy items, you know, combat items, non-fluff items. I think what would be the worst scenario would be that they are only purchasable with station cash. I think that would be the worst of the scenarios for me. I think as long as I can get them in game, and if they are also available on Station Cash, that's fine, but at least I have the opportunity to acquire them without getting them through Station Cash, then that's okay with me.
You know, I went back and forth on this one because I don't like either option, but barring the fact that one of these has to be an option, I think I would have to agree that it's worse to have items that you can buy with Station Cash that you can't get any other way. Because I think that sets up a, like you like to say all the time, a situation of the haves versus the have-nots, where basically if you have enough money in life, you can do whatever you want and get whatever you want that other people who are not spending extra money can't get. So I think that is the worst of those two options. I would rather have, if you're going to have stat items, which I don't think is right at all, but if you're going to have stat items on Station Cash, they should be gettable in some other manner in the game so that other people who aren't willing to spend that money or aren't able to spend that money can also have a shot at them.
Right, and that is my greatest fear about Station Cash, that at some point there will be an item in there which is the end-all be-all, the must-have item in order to succeed, and my guild or my raid force or whatever will say, in order to be with us, you need to have purchased this item. And that will be a very difficult bridge for me to cross if we ever do arrive at it. So that is my fear, is that at some point something like that will come down the pike and I will have to choose. And I don't want to have to do that. So I only hope that something like that doesn't happen. But I fear someday, somewhere, it will.
I think it will. I have no doubt in my mind. I mean, we've been sliding down this slippery slope for over a year. Over 2 years, has it been? How long has it been since they brought up Station Cash?
I got to be honest, I've lost track of it.
Yeah, just this last year, we've seen so many changes that are things that we never thought would happen. In 1 year, it's almost as if we've gone from... I mean, it's like you might as well have started over because it's so different. There's no, once you open that door, I just think it's a matter of time. Everything that you can foresee happening will eventually happen because that door is already open.
Right, and they changed the definition. Well,
yeah, what... oh yeah, that changes with the tides.
Yep, and personnel at Sony and yeah. Directions, it started out with fluff, then it's convenience items like that.
Yeah.
You could buy that world globe, which will teleport you, or arrows that you can purchase on the fly in the dungeon through Station Cash. So
they took the arrows off.
They did take them out, but it was the first step.
Right, and now there's, you know, a race.
Right, so we start seeing things go from fluff to convenience to, okay, maybe it's a little bit more of a convenience. Well, now it's a helper. And, you know,
pretty soon it'll be a must have.
Exactly. And that's where I think it'll be difficult. And I'm not looking forward to that if it does come. And I kind of agree with you.
It's a matter of time.
Yeah.
It's coming. Negative Alley rears her ugly head.
Yeah. I think it's Reality Alley.
Maybe.
Okay. We did have one last email. And it was from Nightfang on the Unrest server. And Nightfang writes, okay. Topic for the next podcast, maybe. ? There are people like myself that are willing to spend hours doing nothing but crafting. Does not matter what crafter, just crafting. EQ2 should either take the gnome class and convert it, or just out and out create a crafting class. Oh, and one more thing. Why is it I can craft 100 arrows at a time, but only 2 food or drink at one time? Signed, Nightfang. So, Allie, I'll pose the question to you, as you are an arrow maker. Why can you craft 100 arrows at a time?
I think because it used to be 99, and they just rounded off to 100 finally. Used to be, well, really, it used to be 99 because that was a stack of arrows. It was one combine makes whatever the end product. If you're a weaponsmith, your one combine makes one item, right?
Correct.
Well, provisioners or alchemists, their stacks of their combine makes two of that thing. There is actually 100 arrows is one combine. And if you think about it, if you were trying to make, say, a stack of 20 food or drink, or 200, I mean, where do you draw the line? You have to draw the line somewhere. It's, I think they've drawn the line at one combine. Now, if you want to get more food and drink out of those materials, then you're talking about changing what the outcome from one combine is. But if you're talking about maybe being able to make multiple combines with one click, that's probably a different change that they would have to make to the game, which actually I don't see happening, because that would be sort of taking out everything from trade skilling. So you could just say, okay, make me this thing and I want 10,000 of them. Click. Nah, I don't see that happening. But I think that's the reason why there's a difference between 100 arrows and two food or drink, is because it's one combine and it just so happens there are 100 arrows per combine.
I think it has to do with balancing too. Arrows, you obviously tinkle through a lot faster than yes. you do food and drink.
In fact, I would say, I would argue you tinkle through arrows a heck of a lot faster than 100 arrows in the time that you will eat two food or drink, because those last, what, 5-6 hours, depending, can last that long.
Yeah, thereabouts.
And I go through, in 5 or 6 hours, I've already gone through, if I'm on a raid, you're talking about, that would be probably two raids worth, I'd probably go through 12 stacks of arrows.
So I think that's where the balancing act is of how many you can make at a time, because if you could make 100 foods at a whack, that's enough to supply that person maybe for a month, 2 months worth of food. They'll never come back. Your arrows are trying to balance against a, you know, usable time period, a consumable time period if you're adventuring or raiding or doing whatever. So I think that's why it works like that. I was trying to come up with some cutesy comment about craftsmen being more efficient or something like that, mass production craftsmen or something like that. But
I think it's just, you know, how many things you get out of one combine.
Right.
I think it's at some point in the history timeline of EQ2, somebody determined what's a reasonable amount of stuff to get out of one combine. Some SOE person decided this and made it that way. And that's just the way it is. Sorry if that's a lame answer.
I'm sure they spent hundreds of hours with spreadsheets and calculations and formulae to arrive at the 100 arrows versus two foods.
Maybe.
It's all part of the master plan. So thank you very much to Nightfang for that email. We're going to kind of use it as a springboard to our topic this week. We're going to talk a little bit about trade skilling.
I mean, trade skilling is a pretty big topic. So we sort of wanted to focus in a little bit. And one of the things I think that is a fun thing to do while trade skilling is to do the trade skill instances. For those of you who don't know, there are 4 trade skill instances that you can do, and you get them from the Isle of Mara. You can do them by yourself, but they're really designed to do with a full group. Basically, there's one combine for each trade skill. So there are 9 different items that you have to make. And each one uses a particular trade skill technique. So for you, Del, you're a weaponsmith?
I'm a weaponsmith.
Do you know the trade skill technique that you use as a weaponsmith?
No, I don't.
It's called metalworking.
Ah, okay.
So to find your item that you need to make, say you're in a full group of 6 people, to find the item that the weaponsmith makes, the natural item, sort of, you would look for, you have to pick up the recipe book, obviously, and inspect it, and it will scribe it to your journal or to your, what is it?
Recipe book.
Thank you. Your recipe book. And you can sort, actually, your recipe book by that particular book that you just scribed so that only those recipes in that book come up. And just look for the one that uses the trade skill technique, wet metalworking. So for me, I'm a carpenter. Mine is sculpting. And then there's one, obviously, one for each of the other trade skills. And you just look for the one that's yours. But you can also do them solo, which is extremely painful if you just use one character. Have you ever tried that?
Yes, and I have to say, I do remember when trade skill instances were first mentioned at Fanfare, Domino had said, yes, they are doable solo. And she phrased it exactly as you did, but they will be painful.
Yeah. It takes a really long time. But there's a benefit to doing them the right way, quote unquote, the proper way. And that is that you get better rewards the faster you complete them. And you can certainly complete them faster. You can complete, you'll notice if you do it by yourself, that the ones that you use your own trade skill technique, those go really quickly. It's just like creating any item. But if you're going against your own technique, like say I'm a carpenter, but I'm making something that an alchemist would make, which uses chemistry, if I'm doing that one, it takes a lot longer to complete one item than it would if I were creating the one that's specific to my trade skill. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does.
I would say it takes at least 4 or 5 times as long, maybe even longer, depending on how much luck you have.
Yeah, I agree. I've done them like that, and when I'm out of my own element, it is very painful to complete one, and I'm very excited when even just one completes and thinking, oh my God, I gotta make more of these.
Yeah, and it's really bad when you're down, you know, you finished the third one of, well, let's go back a little bit. They've changed trade skill instances at some point along the way. I'm not sure when they changed them, but let's talk about when they first came in the game. You had to be level 50 trade skiller. You had to complete a quest called Ship Out, which is given by an NPC up in the moors of Vikisha. And you would have to finish that, and then you can go to the Isle of Mara. And you now have access to the Farseas Trading Company, I believe, or Farseas Supply, I guess, series of quests there. So one of them is given by an NPC, Madria Varus, the Farseas Trading Company Supply Liaison. She's on the second floor of this cabin over there. And she'll give you 1 of 4 quests, and it depends on what day it is. They sort of rotate, just like the daily missions. So there are 4 different places. Actually, there were only 3 to start with, but then they added the void one. So there are now 4. However, they've changed at some point along the way. And I found out actually the other day while doing one, you don't apparently need to complete the ship out quest anymore. I was fairly surprised by that. Were you?
I was not aware of that until you had mentioned it to me.
I think it's good not to have to do that anymore because it's kind of a pain.
Yes, especially when you're running many alts through the same quests over and over again. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, it may very well be that it's one of those things that you unlock on one character, but I don't think so because all my toons, well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say all my toons on the second account that I have, none of them have done the ship out quest, but I'm not really sure. But I know that there are characters who definitely have not completed that because they haven't been anywhere other than the guild hall and they were able to go get those instance trade skill instance quests. So it's not a per character requirement and it may very well be a total non-requirement. It also used to be the case that you could only get 1 instance per day. So once you've completed the trade skill instance for that day, you cannot do it again until the next day. This one I'm not 100% sure that's changed, But I have a theory that it has changed because I was able to get the quest again on a particular tune after having just finished one of those instances. Now, it may be that I took the quest before 1 a.m. my time, which is Central Time, which is when they switch over, and then took the next one after 1 a.m. I'm not 100% sure. If somebody knows whether you can do them back-to-back, please send me an email.
I would say that would be an awesome change because it is something I have wanted for a while. If you are able to put together a trade-skilling group and you go over and do an instance, why shouldn't you be able to bang out more than one instance? If you parallel it to being an adventure group, if I put together an adventure group, I can do many, many instances, not the same instance over and over again, but many different ones with that same group. Why is trade skilling restricted to, I finally got this awesome group of trade skillers together who are motivated to do these, yet I'm mitigated by only being able to do one per day. So if they did make that change, I would applaud it because it's something I've wanted to see for a long, long time. Why are we so restricted when it comes to doing trade skill instances? If we have an awesome group, let us do more than one of them. Let us keep working.
Yeah, I think it would be great to be able to have, you know, an unlimited number that you can do. It's not as if you can do an infinite number in a given day because it takes time to do them. I'm sure there's some maximum. And it's not as if you're really getting anything, any humongous benefit that makes it a good reason to block off that content for a period of time. So I see no reason to restrict it. I did find out something interesting. I did a trade skill instance last weekend by myself. I did the instance with both of my accounts, and I just swapped in all my different tunes. So if you're doing it by yourself and you have multiple crafting tunes, you probably already know this, but you have to group together so that one person, one character is in there saving the instance. That way you can zone into the same instance as your other character. Otherwise, if you're not grouped, and you have to remember to group yourself before zoning in. Big mistake. I blocked myself from an instance for 30 minutes because I forgot to invite myself. So that was sort of annoying. One of the things I found out is there is a specific event that occurs, a trade skill event, specifically occurs inside the trade skill instance that doesn't occur anywhere else. And that's called the Farseer's Innovation. And if you successfully counter that event, you can get a rare raw.
Yes, you can get a rare raw for the tier that you're in, I believe.
Yes, actually you can get a rare raw for, it's, I believe it's for the tier of the quest that you're on, which is going to be level 80.
Oh, okay.
I believe, because I took my level 54 armorer in there and she received the quest, but it was level 80 quest to go do the instance. And when I zoned into the instance, then you get the quest in there to complete all the different combines. As she was doing the combines, she got a Farseer's Innovation event, countered it, and she got a Void Warped Wood. Void Warped Wood is the thing that you use to make these awesome arrows, which I was complaining there aren't enough of. Remember me complaining that one time?
I do remember that one time you complained about warped wood.
I think I've complained many times, but I was really, really surprised to see that. I was not aware that Void Warped Wood was on the table of rare raws that can drop in the trade skill instances, which if you're not a raider, the Void Warped Wood is something that drops off of names, and actually it can drop off any mob in raid. But those sell for a lot of money. So you should do those trade skill instances if for no other reason than to get the Void Warped Wood.
Yeah, I didn't know that dropped in there. That's good information.
It is. I'm going to be banging those out on a regular basis now, knowing that. And I'm going to do it by myself so that I get all the good stuff. It takes about, I think, about an hour. If you have all of them, I have one missing. I haven't gotten my provisioner past 50 yet. But with all eight of my above 50 trade skill tunes, and then having to do the provisioner one on Allie, I was able to bang that out in about, I think it was about an hour and a half, I want to say. Maybe an hour and 45. And if I didn't have, if I didn't have to do the provisioner one on Allie, who is a carpenter, I think I could have shaved off about a half an hour. It's doable. And if you can do multiple per day, that would be completely awesome. So I'm going to try that out and report back. So I wanted to share with you a theory that I have. One of my many theories about the game.
Oh, this should be good.
Well, I think I remember mentioning this to you. One of the very first times we did a trade skill instance together, when they first came out, I mentioned this theory to you, and you kind of ignored me because I think you were busy watching TV or something. But I wonder what you think about this. My theory is this. When you're in a trade skill instance, you know, you get the different events and stuff that occur and you have to counter them. In a trade skill instance, as opposed to being anywhere else, I believe when you counter an event that is occurring on completing an item that is not using your natural trade skill technique, when you counter it, you're better off not using any additional buffs aside from the one you use to counter the event. So my theory is you will increase progress and durability on the item that you're making if you simply counter that event and do no more buffs for that one round through. And then you can buff during the other, you know, the next round through and such. But if you get an event, just counter that event. And it seems to me your progress and durability will be more, will go faster if you don't do any more buffs. But only on items that you're making that are not using your natural trade skill technique. What do you think of that theory?
I agree.
Really?
Circle gets the square.
What?
It was a Hollywood Squares pun. But yes, I agree with your theory. I would even say to take it one step further, when I am not making something that is my primary skill, I have to resist the urge to spam the buttons, because spamming kills.
Yes, I would agree.
And I think what you're seeing is it's even more pronounced when you counteract something. And I would say if you counteract, or not counteract, if you press two of the buttons when you don't have anything to react in back-to-back segments, things start going downhill. It's part of that anti-spamming solution that they have implemented there. So, yes, I agree. When you're doing something that is not your primary trade skill ability, hitting the buttons more so than is required is a bad, bad thing.
I don't think that's the case outside of the trade skill instances. I mean, I can't think of another scenario where you would be making something not using your primary technique unless you're very low level starting out.
There is one place that I can think of because I just did it the other day.
Okay.
There is the weekly trade skill mission.
Okay.
There's one for recovering statues in Fallen Dynasty. There is one for harvesting. And then there's a third one, which requires you to make one of each of the nine skills.
Oh,
so there's
right.
a provisioner item. There's an armor item. There's a jewelry item. When you're making those, obviously as a weaponsmith, I have to go through and I have to make a sage item. I have to make an alchemist item. I have to make a tailor item. The same thing. I am out of my element. I am doing it in the guild hall because that's where all the raws are in the depot. So right. I'm doing it there. So I am out of the trade skill instance. So there, if I start spamming those buttons while doing the carpenter combined, I am going to go downhill very quickly. So I think it's universal that it's related to you making an item that's not your primary skill.
Right.
Than necessary trade skill instance, because I think it's just using the same the same code everywhere.
Right.
I was doing that quest the other week because it came up, and I forget which one. It might have been one of the either Carpenter or Woodworker. I forget which. And I think I failed it 4 times in a row trying to make it.
Wow.
Just bum luck. And then, of course, I can do the all the other 7 or so some odd ones that aren't my primary skill. I did them all on the first try. But for some reason, when that RNG is out to get you, you are doomed. And I think it took me 4 times to make one item. Although, interestingly enough, even though I didn't make the item, I still got a tick mark towards the doing 9,000 combines achievement. Even though I didn't get it all the way to the end, it still gave me credit for it. Because they don't have to be pristine in that. So, so there was a little benefit out of failing so many times in a row. And you're not losing any of your fuel, so you're not losing money, which is nice. You're just wasting raws.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming the depot has enough in them, you can keep going.
Well, one thing that actually came to mind when you were talking about that is, and I don't know if this is true or not, but my also another theory is in the trade skill instances, if you have, say, one of everything except from, in my case, provisioner, it's better to have somebody make that provisioner item who's in the same, I guess, archetype, you would call it.
Yes.
So there's like the outfitter archetype.
Right. In that case, it would be craftsman.
Craftsman, right. Craftsman incorporates carpenter, woodworker, and provisioner. And then there's the scholar, which incorporates alchemist, jeweler, sage. And then there's the outfitter, which is weaponsmith, armorer. What's Taylor. The third one? Taylor. Thank you. My theory is that you're closer to provisioner as one of the other types of craftsmen than, say, an outfitter or a scholar.
Right, and your skills are higher in those proficiencies.
That's right. That's, I think, why it's easier to complete the provisioner one if you're one of the other two in that archetype.
Right, and I think it's careful to say there it's easier, but it's not easy.
Right. Easier. Okay, well, I'm glad you agree with my theory.
I do agree with you.
I have many theories that are unproven.
And some of them are out there.
What? Like what?
Let's
What's
move.
Out there?
Let's keep moving.
You just have no evidence. You just want to say I'm out there. So one of the other things that I wanted to bring up, since trade skilling is our topic du jour, is I have something, I guess, that could fall under the category of things I wish I knew. What we wish we knew. Remember that little segment we incorporated? This one I have to credit to a guildmate who mentioned this to me, and I did not know this before. But I'm totally glomming onto it, and I'm going to shout it from the rooftops. It's better to craft naked.
Well, everything's better naked.
So there is some explanation to this. So when you're trade skilling, you know that you use power to do certain buffs or reactives or arts, whatever you call them.
Yes.
On my bar. And by the way, did you know that you can move those around, the little reactive things, the buffs?
Yes, and I hate that.
Why?
I like them the way they are because I know the order of them, or I can mouse over them, and they're always in the same order. Progress, for me, is always the one on the furthest to the right.
Are you sure that you didn't move them around yourself? You're just taking the default order?
That's correct, the default order.
I arranged mine in when they first changed the trade skill window. By the way, if you haven't been playing since launch, the trade skill window used to look different. There weren't those little buffs on your window. They were just simply in your knowledge book, along with all your combat arts and spells and abilities. So you would have to get a hotbar out and put all your little trade skill things. You'd have to get the most updated one out of your knowledge book and put it onto your little hotbar. So you'd have 6 little things on your hotbar, and you'd have to know which one's which. And then when you say you advance in level and you get new reactives, they enter your knowledge book. You have to be aware that you've gotten new buffs. And you have to open your knowledge book, and you have to now replace them on your hotbar. I think that's probably one of the best changes they ever made to the game, was putting those buffs on the trade skill window.
I would agree.
That was a long time ago they made that change, but it's completely awesome now. And you can move them around. So if you don't like the order of things, because I'm used to them, I basically put them in the order that I wanted them when I first started trade skilling way back in the day when you used to have to make your own hotbar. So I basically arranged them in that order. So every time I start a new character, well, actually now I use my Ally UI settings on all my tunes so that I don't get confused. So I don't really have to rearrange it every time. But the other day I was playing on the laptop while watching football, and I had to rearrange them because they were out of the default order. So anyway, going back to my what I wish I knew. Better to craft naked. When you're trade skilling, there are certain buffs that use a lot of power. And also when you fail to counter a trade skill event, you suffer some health and power loss. You're aware of this, right?
I am.
And so as a result, you know, you have to sort of have some food and drink running to recover power and health over time. But this is something a guildmate told me that I was not aware of. You recover power much better if your health and power are low, particularly when making tier 9 items. So damage and power consumption basically is a percent of the total that you have. But regen is a flat rate based on what food and drink you're using. So if you take off all your gear, your consumption will be lower, but your regen will tick at the same rate as before. Hence, it's better to craft naked.
I have heard this theory before. However, I believe in tier 9, at this point in the game, that theory is kind of out the window. I've never had a problem trade skilling in all my adventure gear with power or health being an issue. It's an unissue for me.
You're Delmon.
This is true. This is true.
What I'm talking about is if you have, say, a low-level adventurer, and you're making tier 9 trade skill items.
I've done that with the Provisioner. The Provisioner is level 90, and he's only a level 13 swashbuckler. And he's wearing level 13 adventurer gear. It doesn't make a difference. I think back in the day, that was a problem. But
it does make a difference.
Okay, all right.
I have proof.
I mean, I'm all for getting naked. I'm not going to deny that as a fact. Actually, I am kind of against getting naked. You should already be naked to begin with. There's no need to get naked if you're already naked. So don't see it as an issue. I don't have an issue with it. I craft clothed. I crafted my trade skilling suit. I don't have problems with power. I believe it's an outdated theory, but
it's not outdated. It's a fact.
To each their own.
Well, hey, more crafting naked is good for everyone.
I'm naked right now.
Okay. Moving right along. Well, that's all I had for trade skilling instances and related items. Did you have any other things to add to trade skilling?
No, but I think if listeners have ideas or they have theories.
I want to hear your theories.
We certainly do want to hear your theories. So drop us an email with those and let us know what you think. Hey, tell us, do you craft naked?
And how much void warped wood did you get while naked?
Wow. All right, let's move to our next topic.
We have an Are You Smarter Than a Delmon?
I think we should change this game.
Okay.
To Are You Naked Like a Delmon?
What would that consist of?
Who the hell cares? You're naked.
So, do you want to set this up?
Are You Smarter Than a Delmon is a little bit of a trivia game we like to play. Ally has two categories that she's going to give us in a moment, and I am going to pick the category which I feel most confident in answering correctly. So, Ally, what are the categories for this week's Are You Smarter Than a Delmon?
Okay, as you remember, we have a normal mode and a challenge mode to each one, so keep that in mind as you're choosing.
Yes.
The first category is Memory Lane. And the second category is Easter eggs.
Easter eggs make me think of chocolate. And I like chocolate.
And you're hungry.
And I'm hungry. And I like chocolate a lot. So let's go with Easter eggs. And I'm going to go hard mode. My guild's been doing well with hard mode. I want to do well with hard mode.
Ooh. All righty. Well, I should tell you, the Easter eggs category was submitted by Domino.
Oh.
I can also tell you, you probably should have chosen normal mode. normal mode, you would have to get 2 out of 5 correct, but you've chosen challenge mode.
Yes.
Which I'm calling the impossible category, and you have to get all 5. Last time you faced Domino, you failed. You lost.
I know. I should not have shot my mouth off like that.
But you, in fairness, you didn't know who you were up against when you chose challenge mode. But the damage is done. You've already pulled. First question. Which trade skill quest contains a Monty Python reference to the flight speed of an Antonican or Phaedra Bixie?
Pass.
You're not going to get any of these.
Probably not.
Second question. The level 70s trade skill writs called Guards Guards, Men at Arms, The Night Watch, and Fifth Armament are a reference to which humorous fantasy author's books?
Pass.
Wow. Question 3. Rune Like Brel and On the Rune, level 83 and level 85 jeweler writs, are references to what?
70s one-hit wonders.
No.
Pass. Can I pass after I've already got it wrong?
Not really.
It's probably like rezzing during the fight.
Yeah. Not really possible.
Okay.
What? This is number 4. What question category name from the Saturday Night Live spoof version of Jeopardy is also the name of a level 89 sage writ?
The pen is mightier.
How on earth did you get that?
Penis mightier.
Oh my goodness, you actually got one. I am totally in awe. Wow. I thought no way could you possibly get that's a sage writ. How did you get that?
Because I know my Saturday Night Live skits.
Okay. I'm very impressed.
Because he thought it was penis mightier.
Oh.
And the category is pen is mightier.
That's funny. All right. And your final question. The tinkered item known as the BFC 3000 is a reference to a huge solid metal plasma gun known as the BFG 9000 from what classic computer game?
I'm pausing because there's 2 games and I don't remember which one it's referenced in. It's either Castle Wolfenstein or Doom. I'm going to say Doom.
And you would be correct. So you got 2 out of 5. So you would have beaten challenge or normal mode if you had selected normal mode, but you didn't. You went challenge. So would you like to discuss the first 3 that you missed?
Sure.
All right, starting with number 1, which trade skill quest contains a Monty Python reference to the flight speed of an Antonican or Phaedra Bixie?
I know the joke, I get the reference, but I have no idea.
So you want me to tell you?
Yes.
Bixie Distraction, the second quest in the Tradeskill Epic quest line.
Okay, I did not know that.
I think you'd probably have to go back and do it and read the quest text for the references.
Which is something I normally do, but I have to be honest, I don't remember that one.
You do?
I do.
All right, the second question was the level 70s Tradeskill writs called Guards Guards, Men at Arms, The Night Watch, and Fifth Armament are a reference to which humorous fantasy author's books? And I never would have gotten this myself because I'm not familiar with this author.
I have no idea.
You want me to just tell you?
You might as well.
Terry Pratchett's Discworld series?
Never heard of him.
Me neither. But I'm sure some of our listeners have.
I'm sure they have, and they're probably slapping themselves on the forehead saying, that guy, what a fool. He's never heard of Terry Pratchett.
Pratchett.
Same thing.
All right. This one I knew. I mean, I didn't know, but I could guess. So the third one, Rune Like Brel and On the Rune, level 83 and 85 Jewelritz, are references to what?
Don't know.
Do those names sound familiar vaguely?
The name sounds familiar. On the Rune sounds like On the Run, which okay. is what the mobile gas station is called, the gas and gulp, On the Run at Mobile.
It's also the name of a song by Pink Floyd.
I gotta be honest, not a big fan of Pink Floyd.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's your first mistake. Rune Like Brel is a reference to Run Like Hell, also a Pink Floyd song.
Maybe if she had chosen Dexy's Midnight Runners, I would have known that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Oh, no. I sense perhaps a Jethel spoof in the making. That would be awesome, don't you think? Come on, Domino.
Yes, I do. I do like that.
Can we put in a request?
I'm sure he takes requests.
Oh, I'd love to hear that one. If we get him to make one, can we play it on the next show?
If he makes Come On Domino, we'll play it.
The wheels are turning. Can you hear the smell of clutch?
I can hear the smoke, yes.
My little Ghostbusters reference. Okay. Well, you failed. Oh, well. You're laying dead.
Much like our first pull on talks, it didn't go that well either, so.
Maybe next time.
Every so often you have to wipe and pull again.
Well, you can pull again in 2 weeks. Or, sorry, in 2 episodes.
I'll be back.
So we wanted to thank everybody for listening. And thank you again to this week's sponsor, The Thunder from Down Under, putting the good day in your mate.
Appearing daily at the Excalibur Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. By the way, did you know I applied? Why are you laughing?
What, you applied to be a Thunder from Down Under bloke?
Yes.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wearing your Speedo?
Why are you laughing? Why is this so funny to you?
I don't know.
Do I not make you Randy? Do I not get the motor humming?
I gotta draw the line here.
What? You were the one who brought up Kraft and Naked.
You're trying to freak me out.
Do I not thunderstruck you? We also want to say thank you to the folks who emailed us this week. Indebuff, Whirl, Sprouts, and Nightfang. You can check us out at our website at eq2talk.com, and there you'll find a button where you can click for contact us, and there will be our email, or you can send an email to us directly. So for me, that's delmon@eq2talk.com.
And you can reach me at ally@eq2talk.com.
Or you can reach us in-game as well. So for me, that's eq2.unrest.delmon, D-E-L-L-M-O-N.
And I'm at eq2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And don't forget to check us out over on the Facebook. If you search for EQ2 Talk, you'll find us there. And we do post there regularly things that we're doing in between each show, so you can stay abreast of all the things that we have going on in between each episode.
And you can check out also the Ally Engel blog, which you can get to from the EQ2 Talk website. I just put a new post up there showing what Delmon gave me for Frostbell.
So have a great day, everyone, and we'll see you here next time on EQ2 Talk. And say good day, Allie.
Good day, Allie. Okay, I'm going to have a sore back by the end of this. And a stiff neck.
Yes, I do too, but usually it's from carrying you.
What? Okay, so another one bites the dust. How'd you feel about that one? That was awesome. Are you still there? Did you hang up on me? I'm sorry. Did I fail?